And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 91. This is your host, Silas Lindenstein. I am here by myself right now in this very second at my home studio. I'm not at the main studio that we record at, but I actually, so this is episode number 91 is a part two of our Star Wars episode. Last week we had in, if you listen to last week, guests, super fans, Star Wars super fans, Mikey Pullman and Alan Arsland came in. They returned to talk about Star Wars to this point, sort of what's happened in the universe as far as movies and media. We're talking all about that. And it ended up being an extended episode, so I just made it a two-part episode. So I know, because episodes have been so long for so long of our career, we've had long episodes, and I'm trying to keep them down to an hour for you, but so it'll be slightly more, probably be like hour five. But anyway, you'll see it on there. This is why, cause I just ramble anyway. So I broke it into two parts. And so I'm here. I forgot to do a recording, intro for the second part while I was there and just realized I needed to do that. And so I'm recording this, right before I release this. And so, yeah, thank you for tuning in for part two. If you want to go back to the first part of it, you can listen to that episode number 90. And then this is basically a continuation where it was left off. So enjoy. Little housekeeping to get started here. Sometimes people ask me, Silas, how can we support Black and a Half? Well, the easiest and free way to support Black and a Half is to go to iTunes. Go to iTunes. Find the Black and a Half podcast, rate us, give us a nice rating, leave a review for us. So ideally 5 stars, and you say something like, I love Black and a Half. They are so funny on there. I love Black and a Half in all the interviews. Ooh, something like that. Okay. Do that. It helps us immensely. It helps us raise in the charts and find new listeners. You can follow us on Instagram or Twitter. You can do that. You could support us as a Patreon member. If you go to Patreon, patreon.com/blackandahalf, you can become a monthly Patreon member. Like, you can start, you can, for $5. You can just do $5. You can do $3. I mean, come on, don't do less. That's rude. But start $5 and, you know, and just to show support for this, because it all does cost money one way or the other. And then of course, thank you to sponsors, which is myself, basically. We need some more sponsors, but, this is a sponsorship part of this intro. If, you are interested in buying or selling a home and you live in the Seattle, Washington area, please visit silasgetsreal.com and connect with, Silas, host of the show. That's me. And you can, we'll go house shopping. Or if you're looking to sell a house, we can do that too. But if you are buying a home, and whether you're in Seattle or anywhere else, go listen to our sister podcast, yourbuyingahome.com. That's your properly YOURE buyingahome.com. And, that's a nice little, how to buy a home podcast. You can do that. Those are all ways that you can support this show. Just, you know, besides listening, listening's great too. And, of course the number one way, well, not the number one, the number one free way to support this show is to, share it, tell a friend to tell a friend. So listen, I know based off of rating, more people listen to this show than have rated the show on iTunes. But right now, if you are enjoying the show, if you enjoy listening to this, even if you only listen once a month, just go to your Facebook page and say, hey, I love listening to the Black and a Half podcast. It's with Silas Lindenstein, Manny Martin, and Nicole Santora, Samantha Rund. They all appear on there and they all do a great job entertaining me. And I just want to say a big shout out. Thank you. Listen to this podcast and share it. blackandahalf.com. And that's the best way. Just telling your friends about it. Tell a friend. to tell a friend. Anyway, here we are. That's our housekeeping. And I hope you enjoy this episode. Part two, Star Wars episode, part two, with Mikey Pullman and Alan Arslant.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
So originally, when we saw the Sith troopers, they were actually supposed to be Kylo Ren troops. Like, there's literally canon stuff that says these Sith troopers defend Kylo Ren. And so, but at some point in development, that's not where the story went. So now the Sith troopers are Exegol, Sith Eternal, like they grew up that way. And that's where he gets this military. And the only reason we had to do that is everyone's going to go, where'd the military come from?
Yeah.
And it, but it doesn't matter. That's where the ships were all.
What's the guy in our, we're in a Facebook group for the listeners that somebody lets know. I want to know about the currency and how they raise money for the Sith army.
Yeah.
How's the economics work on that planet? Like, yeah, I was like, I don't want to hear about economics because that got me the prequels, like tariffs and.
Star Wars has one of the most developed economic systems in all of science fiction. There are rules for everything, and it is as complex as you would imagine a galactic spanning economy to be.
And it makes as much sense as how Starfleet can work with no money when it's convenient for a joke or a plot point. But then you're like, well, but you interact with other places and they want to get paid. So you must have currency in some way.
Well, the technology the Federation has allows them to effectively make things with transporter technology.
Yeah.
So money to them is just an expenditure of near infinite energetic resources.
Yeah.
So we have to let things be half non-canon. Otherwise, Deep Space Nine's problems are solved because Odo can just print cash and buy out everyone that Quark wants to work with. And now there's no crime.
Well, that's why it has to be gold pressed platinum.
Because you can't make that in a in an infinity energy construct.
It hasn't been gold. It hasn't been pressed by gold.
Yeah. They just it makes sense. It makes sense in the rest of the world when like you don't have access to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But there's no real reason once you hit a post-scarcity economy, that plot device doesn't become useful. People who are in the poorer part of the galaxies would give a shit about a lot of things, but you wouldn't care so much about because it would devalue it.
Yeah.
Because if the Enterprise, because if the Feds can do it, then the Romulans can do it and the Cardassians can do it and the Ferengi can do it. And those are the three groups that are not going to be trustworthy with your economy.
Yeah.
Like you don't even need anybody else to screw it up. So it's just in the Star Wars universe. What we have is we have the Sith Eternals exist. They smuggled all the money. And this answers your previous question. In order to smuggle all that military stuff, maybe there is a back door in we just haven't seen in canon yet that would explain literally the amount of metal they had to bring in and all the technology to bring in to build these things. We just know of the one door to get there because the only other person who knows is a Sith cultist or Palpatine himself.
I will say one of the things I love about the both the Rebels show and some of the books taking place about Thrawn that are happening before the Death Star is built. A big thing about it is there seems to be a bunch of money and a bunch of metal being hoarded for something. And we don't know what this is. And there's a big mystery. And even Thrawn isn't in on the Death Star. And he's like, what's going on? There's a bunch of transfer of money. Like there is a money trail for this Death Star that's being like, the black ops top secret thing, and they realizing there's a bunch of metal that's suddenly being taken from places. Like, why? So I really love that because it does get into economics about things and like, well, how was this done? Like without this giant moon, like, oh, it took a lot of work as they were trying to secretly build this giant station.
Huge. It's a huge project that spanned most of the galaxy. And you know, the economy even comes like Kyber Crystal has an economy. The planet that was used in the first of the trilogy for the sequels.
Oh, The Force Awakens?
The Force Awakens. That planet was actually one of the planets the Jedi used to get their own kyber crystals from. And then after Palpatine and the Empire took over, they just strip mined the planet.
Yeah.
And then as the new group took over, they just took advantage of that. It already had all these kyber crystals. They dug deeper, found more, and then converted the whole planet into an energy source.
Okay.
So most of this was done in post-op, obviously.
Yeah.
But that's why planet is the new Death Star.
Starkiller Base.
Yeah, Starkiller Base is an old planet that I think it might even be Ilium. Like one of the main, I can't remember the name of it, but one of the main ones that they actually have in canon. And that explains where it comes from.
You know, I will say one of the things both I love about the universe maybe dislike, but mostly love about it is I said on this other podcast, I did a review of Rise of Skywalker on. I don't even know how you review a movie like Rise of Skywalker, really, or as the end of a saga, because Star Wars is so much more than a movie or nine movies.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's
the amount it is games. It is books.
Which I've played most of the games pretty extensively.
And it's incredible to me. It's like, how do you review an entire universe? Like, you just have to either,
I think,
be a fan or not.
You know, you look at that last trilogy and it's supposed to be this whole Skywalker saga. And I think bringing Palpatine back was the only way you could make that a saga. Otherwise, it's just, okay, well, we had this third trilogy. It's not really connected to the first three. And the main characters are kind of in it, but they die.
I feel like when they call it the end of, I was like, well, that's a marketing thing that came up halfway through marketing plans. Like, it's the end of the Skywalker saga.
They named it the Skywalker saga. I think that's appropriate. Well, I think that's a good name.
Skywalkers are dead now.
Well, it's the start of the Skywalkers, and it's the end of the Skywalkers.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously, like.
Oh, that's what, okay. What's interesting to me when you're talking about how much, like, so there's only so much force energy out there and based off
how many, concentrated,
which is based on how many Jedi are out there. It does. The interesting thing that brings up, I was thinking about this morning or last night, I'm playing this game called the Fallen Jedi.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. I have that. It's a good game.
So I don't know how far I am in it. Maybe
just interrupt.
Far. Yeah.
In Fallen Jedi, you can design your lightsaber to be identical to the one that you build at Savi's workshop.
Oh, that's fun.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Anyways, continue.
Well, I was thinking about, I was like,
that was an ad. For
so this is an escaped Jedi Padawan, right? Basically. And I was thinking, God, they really sucked at Order 66 because every book or game is about a Jedi who escaped and went into hiding. I'm like, all these friggin' Jedi they missed.
But there
like,
were thousands of Jedi around the galaxy.
I mean, that
galaxy.
Is a point I thought later on. I was like, well, I guess there's 1,000. But I'm like,
and as soon as word spreads, like, they all go into hiding.
Yeah, which they addressed when Obi-Wan and Yoda sent that's why they went back to Coruscant, was to fix the transmission so that nobody would come to Coruscant, because the first thing the Sith did when they took over is Palps and Anakin made it so that, hey, come back to the temple so we can super murder you.
Yeah.
Like, Palpatine has... Okay, and all this, of course, is a current understanding of in-universe Palpatine.
Yeah.
Palpatine had fears and concerns. It's expressed a lot in books and stuff like that about killing everybody off. And what we have done is, it used to be, well, Vader went and killed all of them. And now, if you look at the shows and the books and the movies, they actually had a whole bunch of Force users that converted to the bad guy's team. So we have teams of people going out, which is what you see in Fallen.
Inquisitors
and other people, like even the expanded universe introduced Mara Jade in one of the first main trilogies, who is a Sith trained assassin. But we also know Palpatine just makes assassins, like he just has people for tools. He doesn't care about the rule of two.
There are also the Seven Sisters that they introduced in Rebels.
Yeah. Yeah, so like there's all these characters, and not to mention other disciplines for understanding the Force that are not Force based.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I mean, I guess when you say, because he said in the original, so then Darth Vader hunted down all the Jedi.
That was,
killed them,
yeah,
right?
That's in New Hope, right?
Yeah, but that's a point of view,
right?
Because, he killed all the Jedi, not all the Sith, not all the Inquisitors.
Well, just the ones we know of.
Yeah, but like, he said he killed the Jedi, just like when I say, oh yeah, he killed your dad. Like, it's a point of view. I'm like, oh, I thought there were no four. The part that gets weird for me is still the whole like Han Solo acting like he's never even heard of Jedi. Like, oh, it's an old like Latin religion. Okay, that's
one of the actual plot holes.
Yeah.
That
because if you do have all these inquisitors out there, so you know the Force exists, right?
I don't know. No, there's like, you have to understand, like, there's like how many planets are in.
The understanding of the Jedi was very small in general populace.
Billions and billions of
There's millions of satellite. There's millions of settled planets that we deal with. This only counts the ones that we go to.
But there's only a few thousand Jedi. It's like.
But if the government of most places was sending people to Coruscant, right? If they were out there, do you think Jedis were sort of were they a legend in general?
I don't know. Like, I haven't been to DC very many times.
Okay, no, how about this? Imagine if the Jesuits actually had magic powers. I know the Jesuits exist. I've heard stories about them. I know fuck all about what a Jesuit does every day. But if the Jesuits were magical sword-wielding fighters who helped control the destiny of the galaxy, and you just told me on the same planet Jesuits are from, I'd be like, you're full of shit. Now, if I'm literally 2,000 systems over, and you're like, did you hear about the Jesuits who just wreck shit with magic swords? I'd be like, yeah, and I have a bridge to sell you. And
people think it's the Scientology or whatever. Okay.
Palpatine really manipulates all this, and like he does the damage that he gets from Mace Windu to convince everybody that he was attacked by the Jedi. They were already an isolated group of religious figures that people were kind of like knew were involved. And Palpatine was able to, because remember, the leader of the Separatists was a fallen Jedi. That's who Dooku was. He had all these things in line. He hid his own Force powers even up until effectively Return of the Jedi, where the only people who knew that Palpatine was a Force user were people Palpatine could just kill. Like, even his own generals didn't know this stuff. And so the Jedi were this obscure group of people who were doing good, but they were isolationist in nature. We just know that they show up every once in a while and take a couple of our kids. That's all we know. And they only take the kids to indoctrinate them against having passions. One of the faults of the Jedi is that you're not allowed to have a healthy relationship with your feelings.
You can't even have love. They rejected love.
It's attachment. It's not necessarily love. It's if you feel connected to something, we can now manipulate your emotions.
Yeah, which is
right.
Which is why it is court-martialable to have an affair. When you're in the military,
because you're compromised.
Yeah, you're compromised. So because now you can be blackmailed and stuff. So like any Jedi could be blackmailed if you are attached to your parents.
But remember, you're living in a universe where the minute you're connected to the Force, every action you do pushes you towards one of two actual diametrically opposed teams. You fall to the dark side, and it's a systematic step of increased desire for power that makes you a Sith. Anakin and all the characters we see that fall, even Dooku, all did it for good reasons because they were passionate about something.
Yeah.
But if they had allowed Anakin to have a healthy relationship with his mother, there's no reason why they couldn't have saved his mother. They could afford to have just bought her.
Yeah.
They just don't want you attached to her, so they kept her in slavery as the better option. And that's one of the reasons he falls and this is really well established that it's the Jedi's treatment of Anakin and later his apprentice, because Ahsoka gets kicked out of the Jedi. And that's one of the last things that happens in season 6 of the Clone Wars is she gets framed for murder and she didn't do it. Anakin is the cop who brings her in. And then when they find out they were wrong, Mace Windu, Yoda, all these people are like, oh, shit, we fucked up. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to go. And they don't bring her back to later, but Anakin is, and it's another system where you watch Anakin. This was his only tutor. He grew a lot through their relationship.
Yeah.
And so we see that Anakin fell apart because he was attached to things and he was never taught how to have healthy relationships with human emotion.
And because they got him too old, right?
Right. Well, you don't train people at age. You're indoctrinating them at a young age. So it's not the training we've seen through movies and books that you can train a Jedi in a week and a half.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it doesn't take any. You just hit this thing with the blue wavy stick and the rest is magic powers and luck.
Yeah.
But we get them as kids so that we can teach them not to feel things. Yeah. The Sith's problem is that they're led to power. So every decision they make becomes, you know, Anakin, they're always offering power because they see that as what's valuable. Anakin decides that the power to save his wife is more important than actually doing the right thing. because he's trying to protect the things that he cares about, going all the way back to the issue between the Sith and the Jedi are programmed into the way their universe works.
You know, Anakin went and killed all these younglings.
Didn't make any sense.
Palpatine goes and kills all the Jedi. Mm. But if the Force is spread across all of the Force users, and the more Force users there are, the weaker they are individually, wouldn't you want to, like, as the Sith, go and train as many Jedi as you could?
Well, obviously this isn't really well thought out either.
I mean, because if you go and kill all the Jedi, the ones who are left are that much more powerful. Well, and then you have to fight, like, this really powerful one.
Right.
Well, that's Rey. The new ones would be. That's Rey. Exactly what's happening is Rey shows up a total badass. And, yeah, we've got some of this biological identity stuff with Palpatine.
Should be, like, setting up Jedi summer camps as Palpatine. Like, come to the Jedi power camp. We don't even have to test you. We'll just train you, and maybe you'll have some power. But it would
potentially weaken your followers. Too.
But you never want to train the soldiers for the other team either.
Yeah.
Like, because every once in a while they do get a badass just because some people are just naturally more attuned. They still have Yoda. They still have Mace Windu. They have a whole team of people. The only reason Palpatine can body three Jedi at the same time is because he doesn't have anyone else channeling that much dark energy around him. Mm-hmm. He's just so he can jump, do a 360, 720 spin and kill two out of the three, or did he kill three? He killed several Jedi Masters. Everyone that comes to arrest Palpatine is one of the most badass Jedi that they even have. Yeah. And only Kit Fisto lasts longer than like a half second before Mace Windu does. Because he just cuts them all down. The novelization of that attack actually does way better than the movie vision. Because the way he's like surrounded in darkness and so spins out of it.
Do you think the Jedi are fundamentally wrong? Yes. About the way they raise children.
Absolutely. They are. Yeah.
It's their fear that drives them.
I want to see a series of movies that are about the Jedi rejecting love.
I
want to see that trilogy.
Wondering because like Luke is older, right? He's powerful when he starts to learn everything. And I mean, they don't really have a choice, right? They're like, well, we're all going to die unless Luke learns. Yeah. So, and then he starts training. You know, then he fails with Kylo, and maybe he thought when he failed with Kylo, maybe he's like, well, I started too late, damn it. Like, I screwed up. If I could have just trained him earlier, but he's because now all the Jedi are full of attachments to everyone.
Yeah, you don't really actually see a ton of wisdom from the Jedi till after they're dead. and this is just in the seventh short season of the Clone Wars actually has Yoda going on this journey to figure out how to transcend into being a Force ghost.
Okay.
Qui-Gon was the one who Qui-Gon was a non-traditionalist. Some people classify him as the equivalent of a gray Jedi in that he didn't believe he wasn't on the council because his ideas were too problematic. He also would say no to them all the time.
Yeah.
And a lot of the decisions and everything that happens is because Qui-Gon doesn't listen to reason. But also he was only like that because he thought the reason was most of the things the Jedi did were kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
So he was just not very much of a traditionalist. And he was like, oh, I'm going to train this kid anyway. And I know none of you will literally try to stop me. But he was also, and you can actually go back through some books and read this, he was obsessed with the prophecies, which everyone else would treat like prophecies in our world. Yeah, maybe it might happen, but it's probably not literal. Like
a Notre Dame kind of.
Right, but in a world where magic exists and prophecies have actually come true before, Qui-Gon's like, maybe yes. I read the prophecies when I was a student in Padawan, and I understood the same. But now that I'm seeing things, you know, because even Plagueis went and met Anakin when Anakin went to meet the council. Plagueis showed up. Now, this Plagueis is Sheev's Sith Lord.
Yeah.
He taught him everything. He was the one, Darth Plagueis the Wise,
yeah,
that Palpatine wouldn't shut up about. And he came to see Anakin because he knew about these same prophecies. Yeah. And he was concerned that it would affect, because what he was trying to do was definitely unbalancing the Force.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm definitely screwing everything up. And it wasn't until Palpatine killed him, because Palpatine was like, well, I'm not going to learn anything else. So this is the Sith way. Sorry, buddy. You're sleeping. Now I'm going to kill you. So a lot of the issues with the way that the Jedi and the Sith interact with each other are just written into their philosophies and their core. And in the exploration of some of the cartoons and more product, we actually see that the Jedi do good individually. But we see that they are married to the government and being a militarized wing of the government As a matter of fact, Obi-Wan, who's actually my favorite Jedi of all time, when he's about to fight Anakin, he says his loyalty is to democracy and the Republic. He doesn't say it's to what's good or what's right or the light side of the Force. Huh. My favorite Jedi goes, yeah, but I serve the cops. Like, that is literally the Jedi. What they were literally the armed enforcement of bureaucracy, which by itself was being undermined, which is where we come in on the prequels.
Uh-huh. So, well, the Trade Federation's like, oh, great. They sent Jedi to negotiate,
which is, yeah, literally like, their attitude.
We're going to fail. Like, we can't negotiate with someone who can control our mind.
Yeah.
It would be terrifying especially if you knew the Jedi exist and what some of them were capable of. If you knew that someone in your room could just get you to do whatever they wanted, it would be really hard to trust that person.
And then they're using force to break into the command deck.
Well, I mean, that was like after you tried to gas them. I mean, I get that part. Like, the Jedi acted like they were being, I mean, like, but also, like you point out, like, it's not really a negotiation if you send two warriors to tell us how to behave. You know, that's an implied threat.
Do you think the mind trick was known by most?
It's difficult to tell what people know, because we know the Toydarian, I forgot his name, Anakin's owner in the prequels, literally goes, "What are you doing? Wave your hand down like a Jedi." So we know in a desert planet in the middle of nowhere, a random traitor knows the Jedi can do that.
But I mean, he goes to it's only for they said only the weak minded, right? For the weak minded.
Some races are more resistant, Hutts, Toydarians. Yeah. But this was also added after a character had to be resistant for story reasons. If Qui-Gon could just be like, give me the ship piece, we don't have a lot of the plot of the first movie. Yeah. And that's why we couldn't do the same thing with Return of the
Jedi. It may also be focus. Like, there's guards and they're asking every single person coming through, have you seen these droids? And, you know, after the 500th land speeder coming through, you're like, these aren't the droids you're looking for. And they're like, fine. But if you're a traitor,
stop.
But you're like a traitor and you're scratching out a living on this desert planet, and every deal is important. And someone says, hey, you should give that to me for free. And you're like, that goes against the very core of my being.
Also, this is the only one on the planet, so get wrecked. Yeah. Like, and I get where he's coming from. He's got Qui-Gon by the balls really hardcore. Yeah. Yeah, so I feel like the information exists, but it's really story of stories. And it really kind of knows, like, what do you know about the universe outside your... Obviously, the Jedi don't hang on Tatooine. That was the whole point. Yeah. Like, they just... Nobody hangs out here. It's in Hutt space. It's owned by mob bosses.
So few people hang out here that you can hide there with your last name.
Yeah.
And no one's even going to pay attention to you.
Thousands of planets. Millions of planets. One of my own issues.
Which you can all see from one another.
There's a real issue in how small the Star Wars universe is for me. Like, we have this whole really extended timeline of all these really awesome things. You know, the whole idea of exploring Knights of the Old Republic with Revan. That storyline is amazing. And if they only use some of it, it's got unlimited potential. But what we end up seeing is the same six characters all running into each other. There's millions of planets, and you run into the same weird scientist and his sidekick.
Well, and everybody's related. I mean, that black ex-stormtrooper is apparently Lando's daughter.
It is his daughter.
Is it actually?
Yeah.
I know there was hints at that it may be, because...
I think it was originally going to be more clear that it was his daughter.
Yeah, I think that's another thing. It's in the visual dictionary. They did a lot. That's what they do. They've done this with this trilogy. Is they release an expensive book with all the pictures. Like, every single one of the Knights of Ren has a name and a backstory. Yeah. And the Knights of Ren are actually been around longer than Kylo Ren. It's an actual group of ne'er-do-wells. But they don't, like, in the movie.
There's a comic book about them, too.
Yeah. Like, in the movie, it's just, oh, yeah, here's a bunch of guys dressed in black with random weapons.
Okay. I will say that when people complain, well, Leia was the big one, when they were like, oh, they called the Mary Poppins moment, right? About, like, oh, suddenly she's a Force user.
And but she's always like, a Force
she
user.
She was always a Force user.
I know. And then we go, well, we did show it in Empire, right? And in Return, she could sense Luke and stuff. So there's some clear evidence. And they go, and then I go, well, there's books. And they're like, well, I shouldn't have to read the books. And I'm like, well, yeah, but the same hand, Harry Potter, the series as a movies is horrible. Those are not great movies.
Yeah, they're
enjoyable to watch. Yeah. The books are fantastic because they can explain everything and go into everything. So I think it's like, that's where I say Star Wars isn't just some movies. Like if you want, if you like it, then there's a whole bunch of other stuff for you to explore. Comic book. If you want the backstory, like this is the abridged version of what's going on is the movie. Like if you want to know the backstory of everything and know that there's about the Hapes, a dynasty, the royalty system that's tries to marry into the Republic. You know, like there's a whole bunch of worlds out there that would have just been touched in books, but and where we get a bunch of inside jokes from. And
a lot of that stuff comes like a lot of that stuff comes out of it. Like these the books and games and stuff introduce tons of concepts that get folded into the canon properly, or at least introduced. The Sith troopers all exist in groups named after ancient Sith lords. So one of those groups is named after Revan, which now makes him a canon name, but we don't necessarily canonize any of his backstory.
Yeah.
I feel like J.J. Abrams was basically flipping off canon in some parts of Rise of Skywalker. I feel like the Holdo maneuver, they're like, oh, we need to Holdo maneuver all of those ships. And someone was like, nah, that basically doesn't work.
It's a one in a million. Well,
And then they did the light speed skipping, which you can't light speed skip. We're like, well, we did it. Too bad. But
I think that's actually the way to act in a world where we don't have limits. The limits that the lore keepers want to exist are just lines they made up about a thing that changes whenever a new writer or director wants to change it. So you're standing on the sand that shift being like, well, this is where my property line is. It's like, you dumbass, you can't do that on a beach. Like, it's just not how it works. So whenever they want to change something canon, you know, like they just cut off 80% of all Star Wars stuff just so they could start over with the new series.
Yeah.
And they'll do it again.
I think I felt like the maneuver had to be addressed because it had so many complaints.
Also tactically, how is that? Now that we know that's on the table, how do you not just build like 1,000 robot ships and end every military?
Right. So I think they had to address it, that it was a rare event.
Well, and why doesn't light speed skipping cause Holdo maneuvers? They light speeded right into the middle of a city. And light speeded out of the middle of a city and it didn't do any damage.
The only thing that kind of makes sense to me is that light speed skipping goes to gravity wells.
That's what I think.
So I don't know how that excludes stars or planets. But the thing is since like in real life, you don't just tell everybody why you're doing the awesome thing you're doing as a pilot. That's fucking up your ship real bad, which is why nobody does it. They even put that in the story. She's pissed that Han's ship, she says, is on fire. Like, because this asshole almost killed everybody. And even in the skipping, they showed that the odds of them making it were small. No other ship survived, and they almost got swallowed by a giant slug.
Except that the TIE fighters somehow followed them without a problem.
They have that technology now, and it's developed over time.
They have the hyper.
That's power feature creep. Like, it's the same problem with the Death Star technology.
Yeah, but it comes from story needs.
Yeah.
If you can always just jump to another space system, and this happens a lot in the storyline where all you have to do is get away from the blockade.
Then you have to have the hyperspace break all the time. And then that becomes the repeated trope of why don't they just get it?
Which works for the Millennium Falcon, which is why she is unreliable. Mm-hmm. But it can't just stretch to everything because it's difficult with a centralized government to fight a decentralized rebellion over infinite space and time.
Yeah.
So that was just the fault of the system, but they weren't going to do it differently. So this was just a persistent effect. In order to raise the stakes, we put the resistance all into a small group and we make it so they can't run away.
Yeah.
And that was just story-based stuff. And then we're going to figure out why that is as we go, but it was just because it was more exciting that way.
Yeah. One thing, what you said, I disagree strongly with the idea that's out there a lot that Rise of Skywalker undid a bunch of stuff from Last Jedi. Like, people keep saying, oh, he retconned it all, like, or got rid of everything. I was like, really, what? Because I can't actually find a lot of stuff that they just ignored. I get Rose got a smaller role, but I honestly would have been fine. We all liked Rose, right?
I liked Rose.
If she hadn't got the hate mail and they just chose to not use her as much in this one, I also would have been okay with that because we also had people show up in the original Star Wars. We didn't see Mon Mothma again until Return of the Jedi, mm-hmm. right? It's okay for characters to show up in one movie. That doesn't mean they're a lead character now for the rest of the series. No. I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it too, but also, and I think this goes back to what you said, the progression of her character from nervous technician working behind the scenes to potential hero, she jumps through that pretty quick. Yeah. She makes big decisions, she has good motivation to do so, but we took everything, her growing relationship, her place in the resistance, she's already shown what she's capable of, and it boils down to, oh, the Leia just wants me to look at these technical specs. Oh, you mean the one thing that we have robots and randos for? Because she's technically yeah. still just a technician. I think the natural progression for her character would be to get more involved in the diplomacy side. She's the one that convinces Finn to actually become a resistance fighter. Yeah. She's the one, through her own words, is like, this is good, this is evil. She's the only one that points out why the resistance are the good guys. So she would have been a great diplomat type character to have in an actual like longer storyline.
Yeah.
Doing that same thing to other people. We have another woman taking charge, making things happen while the flyboys are out there getting shot at.
Yeah.
Because you need that person. But they decided that's a lot to put in this movie.
Because this was an action movie.
Yeah, because it was an action movie.
It was not going to be about diplomacy, yeah. and there was there wasn't much downtime for...
There wasn't any. We have 16 hours.
So, I'm trying to think of other things that people said. Like, the Holder maneuver, I was like, oh, I'm fine with that. Like, they acknowledged it, and we moved on. Like, or about... stuff with Luke. Like, I was okay with him dying. Like, yeah, he came back. But I was also, in Last Jedi, I was honestly a little disappointed that Yoda came back. Like, I was like, oh, I like people just to disappear, kind of, be gone. Like, why didn't Obi-Wan show up?
Well, you know? I mean, Obi, yeah.
And even right. Last Jedi, I didn't really care for the... I love Last Jedi. I absolutely love it. I didn't care for the lightning, Yoda creating lightning to burn up. I didn't like that. But
he was just being a dick.
Yeah.
But also, he already knew that the books weren't there anymore.
Yeah.
So the Jedi ghosts have a long history of not giving you all the information you need.
Yeah.
Like,
by burning the tree, he made it so that Luke didn't know the books were gone.
I just felt like
he was covering the tracks. He was covering Rey's tracks.
Did you feel like Last Jedi or that? The Rise of Skywalker got rid of, ignored?
Just a tone change. It. You know, like how we go to like...
Ignored what?
It felt... People said like, oh, it seems like JJ just ignored The Last Jedi.
And he was like, very much what he did is he did that first, especially the first 30 minutes. He showed you what his version of the second movie would have been. And then we just rush into the third movie.
So
this shows that whole action line of Kylo Ren going to Mustafar to grab the thing, the MacGuffin, everybody doing all this stuff. That could have made a whole cool movie.
Oh, yeah.
Following Kylo Ren as he consolidates his power. We're watching this evil guy getting all the things he needs, finally gets the thing that he wants. And then we move up to this because they've been resisting Kylo Ren the whole time. We had to compress that, which in a comic book, if you just gave me a comic book that was based on a random character, like give me Lando at 35.
Yeah.
Right. And you're just like, all right, here's what Lando's been doing. I'm in.
Yeah.
And that's the energy we got with this movie. We're like, here's what everyone's been up to. Go.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like sometimes the movies start with big wars happening. Go. And then we just jump right into the action.
Yeah.
And as an action movie, this is totally permissible. But somehow Star Wars has a deeper meaning and we expect more from it.
Yeah. I do think a missed opportunity with Rise was, I think the reveal of the Emperor would have been so badass if it hadn't start off with the Emperor lives and we know he's out there.
I thought that was hilarious.
Did we have this conversation?
Because they showed at Comic-Con, they showed the preview.
Yeah.
And at the end of the preview, they had Palpatine's laugh and everybody was like, oh my God, it's Palpatine. Right. And we talked about it for months. And then the opening crawl was like, a mysterious voice beckons across the galaxy and everybody's talking about Palpatine returning. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened
with
the movie.
But if he had been, if there had been a voice and they're like, whoa, 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 is that? Who is that? Is that Palpatine? And then they went on this search thinking it was a swerve or something. Like, yeah, like you said, a whole movie on this search. And at the end of the movie, Kylo walks in and it's the Emperor.
There's no way they would have been able to keep Ian McDermott secret, though. As soon as he's cast, everybody knows. I think they made a conscious decision to make it part of the marketing.
I think if he had made the second movie and that was the movie and that was the side when we follow Kylo's journey, further struggles.
Because they could have not had him in. They could have not announced him like they didn't announce Han being in Rise.
Yeah, they could have done it. I feel like that was another one of those decisions made by corporate things.
Yeah.
It guarantees seats. It does wrap up the trilogy nicely.
I wish there were more foreshadowing about Palpatine in the first two of that trilogy. There was no foreshadowing that Palpatine was alive.
Except that did kind of, I don't know, I feel like in the back I was always kind of like, well, Snoke's the Emperor. Like, he's basically being the Emperor
this
now.
This is an important sidebar.
He's basically the Emperor.
The one plot hole I haven't seen explained well is if Snoke was literally an instrument for Palpatine, why was he so intent on having Rey murdered? He needs Rey's body, yet he's going to just kill her in the second movie?
No, Palpatine he's an opportunist. He was going to take Kylo Ren's body eventually. When you learn that his granddaughter was there and she arrived, he's like, oh, no, that was my plan all along. You dead. I wanted you here. And I want you to strike me down so that I can inhabit your body.
This is an inexperienced Rey. This is a Rey that we could just give you to Palpatine on his planet full of Sith immortals, and he'll just gonna, because it didn't take long to twist her when she got there.
Okay, but at the same time, he orders Vader to go kill Luke. And then in Return of the Jedi, he's like, no, you'll turn to the dark side. I've foreseen it.
Yeah, but it wasn't at the expense of his own life. Snoke obviously had no idea he was about to die. That was very clear from how he died. And I love that moment. And that fight is amazing. But up until that, he literally is envisioning the death of Rey right in front of him. That whole twist is required on us to think that Snoke is either programmed to believe or is just an instrument of Palpatine's, and that he's lying to either Snoke or something, because something is missing in Snoke's brain that makes him go, kill her now, and then talks about how she's about to die, like he's gloating about her death.
Yeah,
that is not consistent with Palpatine's plan at all.
I could see that. I mean, listen, I see your point. The only thing I could think of is that the Emperor had knew, and he's like, no.
Yeah.
Or that he, for some reason, he thought to get Rey here, he needed Kylo
I think he was happy killing Rey, but as soon as Rey's there, he's like, oh, let's see if I can use this to my advantage.
Yeah. Because was he just manipulating Kylo the whole time when Kylo showed up? He's like, no, we're going to rule together. We're going to get Rey. We're going to kill Rey.
Well, that actually is in character for everything Palpatine did. Dooku thought, and Dooku's look on his face right before he gets his head cut off. Like, the look on his face comes from the actual plan to Dooku's understanding was for him to be captured and then use it a bargaining position to end the war. And then he would be released and could just retire.
Yeah.
That he's a landowner. He's a nobleman. He's rich. He has a castle and everything.
The count.
Yeah. He literally had quit the Jedi and was just fucking off and got involved in politics because he thought he was doing good things and got used. The only reason, so the whole thing was he was the apprentice for a while, but just the same as he only trained Maul to use to kill Jedi, he had no intent to keep him as an apprentice. His abilities were limited based on who he was. Dooku wanted both good and dark side access to things, and he was willing to work with him, but he didn't have long-term investments. So, and Grievous was just a tool because you need a crazy general to help influence people to jump on your side.
Yeah.
So he didn't care if Grievous died, and he really didn't care if Dooku died as long as Anakin wins.
Yeah.
So at every fight you see, and through like the animated series and stuff, Dooku and Anakin go up a lot, and you actually see Anakin slowly getting better. Every time somebody beats Dooku with a blade, he uses his force powers to beat them.
Yeah.
And it's not until Anakin can match him in both fields that he actually wins.
Hmm.
And Dooku just naturally believed that he would never get beat in both simultaneously.
Yeah.
Because only Yoda can do that.
Yeah.
And you just don't expect some kid who you've been beating up almost consistently for years. You've chopped off parts of his body. Like, they do a lot of good stuff in the Clone Wars. Obviously, I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
Between those two characters, as Anakin becomes more powerful and more confident, the fights get closer, but Dooku always wins. So to have him gamed at the very last second when he thought he was being the one that was clever, very much Palpatine. Very much my pieces will be playing against each other, but I'm the only one playing chess right now.
I may watch the Clone Wars again, give it a try. Like, my biggest gripe with the Clone Wars and one of the prequels is the damn droid, the Roger droids, because they do not come across menacing to me.
No, they're not menacing.
By being Roger.
Yeah.
So I'm like, they're not threatening. And so I'm like, trying to take them seriously as the bad guys is really challenging for me. And that's why I'm so glad they barely show up on Rebels when the few times they do. And they're like, oh yeah, what are these guys?
Well, there's a reason they weren't continued. People didn't continue using them.
Well, they were just the money. They're cheap. They're effective, and it's the only way to raise millions of soldiers.
They're obedient.
Well, they're robots.
Yeah. Well, and they could only win based off of mass, right?
Yeah.
It's just throwing a ton out there. Eventually, one's going to shoot and hit.
Well, tactically, actually, that military is much more efficient than a clone army, because the clone army only had like 1 million to 2 million troopers. They had several millions and millions of droids.
Yeah.
The individual military units down to the very individual level are good. But if you send a wave of blaster fire downhill, it takes years to replace a single clone. And all I need to do is requisition another 10,000 troops by just pushing a button.
Yeah.
Like, so just through attrition, they were going to win eventually. And it even goes back to what I was saying about, it's just more ethical to use robot soldiers than men. Men that you made just to die for you? Real dicey.
The original books, I think, had it right with the Clone Wars. Because what they hinted at in all the books with the Clone Wars were before the prequels were written, is that there were two sides of clones fighting each other.
Yes, that was the legends.
And they kept... So whenever like, oh, we're going to send a million people to go fight in this planet. Well, we're going to send a million. Oh, they all died. Let's bring another million and go fight. And that's why everything was just decimated across the galaxy and why everyone hated it so much.
It was good sci-fi.
Yeah.
It has a very 70s feel to it.
Getting near the end here, I want the future of Star Wars.
Yeah.
What are you most looking forward to in that's upcoming? I mean, I'm loving Mandalorian. I love the first season. I want to see what they do with that. What are you excited about from projects that you've heard coming?
Well, I can't wait to ride the new ride at Disneyland.
I've never been to Disneyland still.
Oh my god.
My sister rode it. She said it's the best ride other and ruins all other rides.
I'm very much looking. That's going to be a closing gift for me.
And I want to stay at the hotel that they're building in Disney World.
Oh,
have you heard about this?
Yeah.
And how you arrive and they put you on a shuttle to go up to the spaceship.
That sounds good.
And then you stay on the spaceship for 2 days.
You do that. Mikey,
it's a cruise ship. It's a landed cruise ship.
I get why you would not want to go to Star Wars or to Disneyland.
No, I've just been broke my whole life.
Right.
I'm poor. I'm not like you people with money and resources.
I don't know. It's weird because I've been able to go. I've only been able to go as many times because I have relatives that live near there.
Yeah, so it
I
does help a lot having access.
And then once when I went with my family, I got let in, and it was just because I know somebody. And you got to go. The experience, especially now with the stuff like Star Wars there, it's just so incredible. I mean, Star Tours alone was incredible when I did that, when that was the only thing there. But what about fiction though?
Yeah, I'm so happy about The Mandalorian, and I can't wait for them to continue that.
Sidebar, and I realize this, and it's tricky. Okay, so they want to do more diverse stuff, like with casting and everything that, right? One of the things I think it's the best about The Mandalorian that no one addresses is there's no white male lead in the show at all, and we get away with it because our South American guy is wearing a helmet. So we don't think about him being not white.
When he took a helmet off, was he a white
person? The actor is very pale skinned, but he's like Argentinian.
But there's three actors playing him.
Oh, he's got like body doubles and stuff like that.
But there's one main person I heard that walks around as the Mandalorian.
It's like John Wayne's grandson.
And then there is the voice. And then there is the one they unmasked of is a third actor. Person.
But the character that we actually see isn't a white guy. You know, the character's not white. Yeah. We have a white woman in there, but she's non-traditional. She's a former fighter. She can throw you over a house.
American Gladiator, right?
My favorite type of, I mean, she's a cool, and she's a cool character.
Yeah.
You know, she's a shock trooper who is dealing with trauma from the war and fallout of being a mercenary post not having any other skills.
It's so weird. My daughter doesn't really care for her.
The character is not for everybody, but I love her deeply.
What are you talking about?
I want her to crush me.
She's non-traditional physically in there, and she's like...
She's a real person.
Nah, I don't see it. Nah. She's like, I think she's a... My daughter thinks she's a bad actor. And I was like, you're 12. How can you judge this?
She's not a great actor, but it's fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, she's doing a pretty good job of playing who she is. And so I like that. I think... The future of Star Wars is diversification.
Yeah.
We're developing a lot of projects. Disney is developing a lot of projects. I have hopes for things like Obi-Wan. I'm a huge fan. I like the sassy character. You know, we love the actor. You know, like everything about that show looks good, but until we see it, we don't know how Star Wars is going to react.
Are they still working on a trilogy that has nothing to do with the Skywalkers?
Yes. Okay. So the last I heard, there were three projects in development. They're leaning towards the Knights of the Old Republic. I am pro this because one of the biggest problems has been the lore keepers. The further we get away from lore, the less negative feedback. Because remember, the Republic has been around for a long time, and the universe can exist whenever we want it to. So we can literally go back 500 years where nothing is written. So we're 500 BBY, and Force still exists. They're still the same settings. Technology doesn't grow fast in the Star Wars universe.
Except for Death Star technology.
Well, that technology has also existed previously before because there actually were super weapons. Okay. Matter of fact, Mustafar, the planet of Vader's castle that Anakin got chopped up on, also the first planet that we see with all the trees on it in the beginning of this last movie, that was actually covered in lava because of a Jedi or a Sith super weapon.
Though I will say, I mean, if you look at our history of the last 30 years, what we've done with processors, if you can
or just extrapolate
that to like, hey, once we crack the Death Star thing, well, how can we get this going? They got a Bill Gates of Death Stars up there figuring out how to get it out to the masses. Right.
You would need a centralized government like a fascist dictatorship to combine enough resources from this many different things. Like you need the Kyber crystals or it doesn't work. Kyber is a super rare thing that the Jedi have been hoarding for 1,000 years. So it wasn't until recently that Kyber was even accessible to modern technology. And it wasn't until Palpatine took over and just took shit out because he had all the access to the Jedi library. He just knew where all their stuff was. And then once you have Kyber technology, you can start develop Kyber weapons. So Kyber technology comes from the Kyber weapons, which eventually becomes a whole thing.
I didn't realize, it never occurred to me how much power getting a hold of the temple would be.
Right. You get all their information, all their access. Plus you have Anakin who already he's not on the council, but he's a high ranking Jedi.
Yeah.
He already had access and nobody stuck around long enough to take that away. He killed the librarian himself. Plus the best fighter that was there at the temple when he showed up.
Who killed the librarian?
Anakin went through and killed every major Jedi himself.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that Anakin was just better at was he just has better at force powers. So he was kind of like Dooku. Anybody who could fight him, he could just crush, especially once he embraced his dark side powers. So for me, to answer your question, I love the idea of exploring Star Wars themes outside of the confines of what the fan base denies or the fan base demands, because we have we talk about if we put a good character into Revan, if we go back into the balance between good and evil, what is right. All of that stuff back then stems from there's a war and some Jedi decide that the right thing to do is to fight in the war. And the other Jedi go, yeah, that'll lead you to the dark side. Oh, and it does. Yeah. But they don't make the wrong decision. Revan ends up being both a good guy and a bad guy. The story is fascinating. That alone, I think, would be great. We have the same themes. Mm-hmm. We have the same feel. We get away from a lot of the bullshit. We'll still have people that are never going to be happy.
Yeah.
But I think that's just large fan base. We also have the
financial incentive to make inflammatory articles that complain about stuff.
Yeah.
Algorithms support negative videos over positive videos. So for every negative video out there about way these movies suck, somebody does one with 10% of the viewership that's like, these are why these are good. Yeah. You know, I watched a thematic one just yesterday about how the patterns of yellow, red, and blue follow. So, because remember, Lucas believes in poetry through mirroring.
Yeah.
And you see this in every movie. In this movie, yellow is the neutral state. Red is when things get bad. Blue are when things get good. The first movie in the trilogy was yellow. The second one was red. The third one was blue. The first thing that they transfer through their force powers in this last movie was the yellow necklace. The second thing is when they destroyed the thing that the obsidian or whatever that the helmet was on was red. And the last thing that they hand to each other through their force connection is a blue lightsaber. Mm. She ends on a yellow lightsaber, signifying through their own process that this is both the end and the beginning of a new cycle. And then it just perpetuates forever. Yellow, red, blue. And so that kind of stuff is, yeah fantastic. This is one of those late analysis things that I didn't know at all.
Yeah.
But a bigger nerd had to point out to me.
Yeah.
But then once you start to see this throughout, like when you look at the way the colors are, there's so much that can be done with this. The only negative sides of it are all this rotating things around this culture and how we really make it important. The only important thing that really matters is what C.S. Lewis wrote about the reasons we write about dragons is so that people know they can be defeated. We need evil villains because we want to see a ragtag group of heroes win, because the real life's not like that. It is an emotional thing for us. And those things I would like to continue. Mandalorian is basically about a guy trying to pay back a favor done to him and just to do the right thing when he is not a good person intrinsically. In a universe where good and evil don't exist.
Yeah.
You know, he has no problem killing people to protect other people or killing people for money or like, but all those people deserve it. He is finally faced to make moral decisions like this old Wild West. That's why it's very Western attitude. Well, like this also goes all the way back to the whole lone wolf and cub attitude. We have a trained mercenary killer now taking responsibility for a child. And at the end of the first season, we have some dude, violent guy, doing the right thing. And that story can continue through this medium. And I really enjoy that a lot about Star Wars. It's not as complex as Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, modern Star Trek has taken a little bit of a step, but it's not about lessons. It's about the underlying story of good versus evil. And the fact that the little things you do matter.
Yeah.
And I know it's one of the reasons I like the story so much.
Well, backtracking to something you said a lot earlier today.
I say a lot of words.
It was about Han Solo when we get to know the characters and we know what they're like. I think that was one of the big reasons that when him shooting Greedo for so many people was so important and to me, because we defined his character by that, and we knew that he was a badass but that made his turn, I feel, bigger. In that, maybe he was like, you know, he's a border. I mean, I still say it was self-defense regardless. He had a gun in his face. So it's self-defense when you shoot someone under the table.
It's very Western.
Yeah.
Yeah. But bounty hunter comes to kill you, but you got a gun under the table. It angers me
because like we had established who his character was and to see him turn from the badass fighter to I'm going to save these Ewoks or, you know, is a bigger turn than him just, I'm just defending myself all the time, but I'm like, no, I'll kill if I need to. And we all saw him as this badass, and then Lucas kind of pulled that from us, and I think that was what's so upsetting.
His moral ambiguity and character growth was
The moral ambiguity.
Solo also got rid of some of that moral ambiguity because he made the good decisions in Solo early also.
On. Yeah, I do feel like they were on that path of softening him anyway, or to see where he... I would have liked to see him start off like that and get really hardened. And so I think they hinted toward it, but maybe not perfectly. But if they had really hinted like he is now a hardened man because of these events, and then it took 15, 20 years to get back to his soft side again.
It's very difficult trying to write a very likable hero that you want to be a scoundrel. You know, like unless you go like a Robin Hood angle where he's intrinsically
or Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right. Which is right. But we look at Han's actions in Solo at the end of the movie. He ends up doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And we see that as his character. I didn't mind it as much, but I know that the balance is difficult. when we get introduced to the character, all we know is this is a guy who has done some shit, who's trying to scam these two yokels, he thinks, you know, like, but he's not even the one doing the job. Those fucking his buddy that went out and got him work. Yeah. He was just chilling in a bar.
That's true.
A dude comes up to kill him once he sees that he's alone. Yeah. He guns the guy down and is like, here's some money to clean up the mess. And that was the guy we liked. His growth in the first movie is being attached to this golden hearted farm boy and this passionate princess who cares about people. It changes who he is as a person.
Yeah.
Because he does take the money with plans to leave.
Yeah.
In my head, and I don't know if it's been addressed, I think the minute they're away from everyone else, Chewie gives him an earful until he changes his mind. Because I know he's on the fence, but think about it. Chewie.
That would be a great sketch, right, by the way.
I feel like because we don't understand Chewie, we don't understand what he's talking about. We go through a lot of inflection.
Yeah.
But Chewie as a person. This is another thing, just a side note before we get away from it entirely.
Yeah.
In the Visual Dictionary, they made this point that Chewie is non-political. And it's one of those things that fans are like, you mean the guy who is literally at the central of several galaxy-spanning rebellions, who watched his friends and people, his family was slavery. Enslaved, and that like, he's slavery, apolitical?
I could take it or leave it.
Yeah, like
my family was slaves. It wasn't that bad.
Everyone he cares about fights against this fascist. He's as anti-fascist as anyone. The only person I see being non-political is probably C-3PO because he's just scared of everything.
Yeah.
But even he gives his life in the last movie. Yeah. You know, I just think Chewie is under like Chewie in the books is way better because you actually get to see his thoughts. Yeah. They kill Chewie in the books to save the kids of the Skywalkers. And
my mouth dropped when I read that.
Yeah. Moon lands on him.
Yeah.
But he sacrifices himself to save somebody else. Chewie's character is really good. I really like him because, I mean, even the expanded version where he has to do it because of his own country, his own cultural morals because he was saved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you wondered how many times C-3PO has sacrificed himself?
And had to be the rebooted? Same way. Probably not a lot.
All of the best adventures, he probably sacrifices himself. And then, like, R2 reboots him, and he's like, oh, I never do anything exciting.
But one of my favorite lines from C-3PO, actually, because I think they did great with him in this character.
Yeah.
They really did, is when Babu Frick says something, and he's like, oh, that's one of my oldest friends. Yeah. Even I'm like, today? And I'm like, that to me, that's super fun, because the personality's still the same.
Yeah.
Because he's that guy.
Yeah.
But he's just,
I hated how mean they were to the 3PO in this last movie.
It was a lot of...
they were a little too mean to him.
Whatever.
They don't respect slaves in the Star Wars galaxy.
No, and the
droids are slaves.
Yeah.
Like, they can be friends, but they're not. Yeah.
That was one thing I really liked about the books. The books had this whole, underlining through many books about droid rights. Droids were trying to get rights because the way they were treated. But I think, where the prequels almost kind of touched on all that was... I think it was supposed to be that when assassin droids became a big thing, I think it was that you guys ruined everything. Like, you had this huge war with the clones. You were destroying everything, and the prejudice against the war and all the droid wars made people not like any droids.
And that makes sense. That makes sense to a degree that I find it acceptable.
Yeah.
There was a galaxy, but there was also many thousands of planets that were never affected by war.
Yeah.
Anybody who did what the Emperor said when they showed up, he let them run their own planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he let them, provisional governments were run by locals. He might have a moth that oversees everything, but you get to do what you want. The average person isn't scared of robots, just like they're not scared of the Sith. At best, it's a story. It's just, to me, that only makes sense on the planets where they saw things happen. Because we have horrors happening on this planet all the time.
You see the prejudice against black people in countries that they don't, what they assume what black people from America are like because of media.
But we never went to war with black people. We stole them and then convinced everybody. Like
Norway, what they've heard about the inner city black is like, but you're just watching. Movies.
Super long conversation, but I believe that tribalism is extended into going into racial stuff like that. It just comes from fear manipulation, and it's just easy to believe bad things about the other.
That's what I'm saying. I think if they could do that in Norway, I think Palpatine could have got people prejudice against droids on
but
Tatooine.
I already know droids. Huh? It's not like you're convincing me about something
that's
that doesn't
true.
Exist.
That's true.
We have a droid that's in a the house point. That helps our mom make dinner every day.
That's true.
And it helps with the numbers, and it cost us what a car would cost us.
I feel like I remember something in the books about it was more people, it was more droids like C-3PO that seemed to be sentient that they had bigger problems with than like the Roomba, you know, like the Roomba is a tool. When they start getting to the speaking level, people start getting uncomfortable. And there was like, I know this should be dumb to be illegal that, well, that, okay, like C-3PO was not allowed to speak Sith. There was something about droids were not allowed to arm. Like assassin droids were like the biggest crime. Well,
They're low key illegal.
Yeah.
If you compare the Roger droids to an assassin droid.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot more resources put into that assassin droid. It's much smarter.
Yeah, like the IG
and
series.
It's much, much more effective. And that's really scary.
Yeah. I think they were more scared of assassin droids.
And apparently the IG line had instructions not to be captured.
They that in Mandalorian.
The manufacturer did not want people learning whatever secrets they had, and they would self-destruct before they allowed the manufacturing secrets to be revealed.
But the
Roger droids had no issues.
The Star Wars books, the analogy toward racism was toward droids.
Yeah.
That's how they were in their console.
Yeah, it's
C-3PO dealt with prejudice a lot in the books.
Yeah, well, it's not supposed to be hidden. Like, that's just part of their universe. We just kind of normalize it that these guys are property because they're robots.
I didn't like that our heroes were clearly prejudiced toward him.
Luke was better.
Luke treated R2 and C-3PO with respect.
The heroes and the new one.
Yeah, that's that old trope where we always have a character. I forgot the name of it, but where you have an idiot on the team because you can just make fun of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it's done in a lot of really good things, you really notice a lot in
Jar Jar.
Like Parks and Rec. We have Jerry Gary.
Yeah.
Who is the writers fixed it only by giving him everything a human being could possibly want. But they treated him actively like garbage the whole time because that trope is functional.
Yeah.
So when Han Solo is irritated, he has personal feelings about droids, but he's just cranky right now. And that's just who he is.
Yeah.
But the out and out prejudice against these people, that has to be at a lower level. Like
Paul was a big old bigot.
Well, I mean, we didn't touch on it a lot, but those two actors, Poe and Finn, were treated interestingly as the scene went on. Like, you know, we retconned a guy because Poe is the son of a famous pilot whose family was in the rebellion, and then he becomes a drug runner and then becomes in the resistance. They added him as a drug runner in the third movie instead of just being the son of a hero.
But he wasn't a son of a hero in the other movies.
He was.
In the movies?
His mother was a pilot in the resistance. It's like a throwaway line. I don't know.
Oh.
It's like a throwaway line but it was canon that his mother was a famous pilot in the rebellion. She dies when he's young. Blank spot.
Oh, okay.
Now, it's such a good storyline. Like, yeah, this guy has always been a badass pilot. He got it from his mom.
I can see that story, though.
Well, we made this movie about identity.
Military, yeah.
Right? So we have to go back and explore everyone's thing. We already know that Finn was a stormtrooper. But Finn himself doesn't really have much to do in this movie but run around and scream Rey all the time. Like, Oscar Isaac and Boyega have gotten a lot of negative feedback because they're not happy. Recently, they asked Oscar Isaacs if he'd do the character again of Poe, and he's like, no. Because he just doesn't want to do it because of the way, like, they want the characters to be treated or not the way they're being treated in the series.
Yeah.
So unless things change, I think we're done with at least some of these characters.
Yeah.
Or unless they throw enough money at these guys that they'll be like, yeah, sure, I guess I'll do another one. Which is how we get Harrison Ford back.
Or if they do explore that Finn is Finn's Jedi sensitive.
He has the same.
Boyega said he won't do TV shows. So if they do that, it'll be in the movies.
He won't do TV shows. Yeah.
You know, a lot of actors said that until television shows became the best way to get screen time.
And became so freaking
well,
good.
Well, but he said it very recently.
Yeah. Be sure he can do whatever he wants.
I know, but then I'm like, but then once you saw like not Meryl Streep, I guess, but Glenn Close, when I saw her do a television show, I was like, whoa, things are changing.
But the money they throw at these shows, though, like
some of them are so good. It's
like
just,
Amazon has spent like, I don't know, it's over $1 billion on the Lord of the Rings show so far. And they have several planned.
Wow.
Like, and that kind of money. Yeah. I'll drop $20 million on an actor to do 13 shows.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Okay. We got to wrap up here.
All right.
Hey, guys.
That's a good way to end a podcast. This might be Christ.
This might be two episodes. I probably will just do two episodes at this point.
We'll talk for 10 more minutes.
A trilogy.
But the third one won't be any good.
I'm going to have...
With Muppets.
I have another Star Wars film. Right, this Black and Apple will just be Star Wars episodes from now on. Hey, thank you to my super fans coming in here to talk about the super geeks, for coming in to talk about Star Wars today. This has been one of my favorite. It just flew by for me because I'm like, this is just me sitting around talking about Star things I love. It's
I
great.
Love Star Wars.
But thank you so much for coming on. There we are, Black and a Half.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Live long and prosper and prosper and prosper and prosper.